Before that, though, our Friday panel have joined me in studio. We'll meet them after we remind ourselves of some of the main news stories of the past few days.
This, unfortunately, has led me to believe that we cannot trust this minister. And if I cannot trust him, I cannot have confidence in him. And I represent Clare, of course, but I'm also representing the people of the Midwest who are crying out for this unit. It is absolutely essential.
Brexit is the overriding issue in our country. There's no doubt about it. I don't think the farmers of County Clare or the business community of County Clare will thank Michael Hartey for trying to destabilise this government.
We've only had the first Clare announcement. I believe there will be several more Clare announcements over the coming months with a very strong field and a hinge. I would be surprised and disappointed if the many people we expect to come to Lahinch don't come simply because Rory is not playing.
The priest will be available always to celebrate the funeral mass, but the priest in the future may not be available, you know, to be prayers at the graveside or in the evening before at the home or in the church. Okay. But there are competent lay people who will be able to do that.
Oh yeah, it's great, yeah.
Great for somebody, yeah, great for the village as well. You'd have to share that money out, you know.
You'd have to go on holiday, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd have to. On a cruise. Travel the world.
Yeah.
There you heard from Deputies Michael Hartey and Joe Carey. They clashed on the former's decision to back the motion of no confidence in Simon Harris. That was a decision Michael Hartey took, excuse me, after what he called the last straw of there not being a new 60-bed unit in place at University Hospital Limerick this winter. John Gleeson of the Lahinch Golf Club and Rory McIlroy's withdrawal from the Irish Open, Father Tom Ryan, Innes Parish Priest, on the reality, as it sounds like it soon will be, of there being less involvement of priests in funerals and some delighted folk in the Knoll, County Dublin, after a local family won the massive €175 million Euromillions jackpot there this week. To discuss some of these stories, I'm joined in studio this morning by Gerald Howard from Crimmins Howard Solicitors in Shannon, by William Cahir from Cahir and Company Solicitors in Ennis, and by retired Anglican minister based in Milton Malbay, Bob Vernon. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the programme this morning. William, I don't know how often we've talked about the hospital on this slot, but it remains an issue, and I won't apologise for it, because unfortunately what we heard this week will have come as a big disappointment to many, many people.
No, it's a huge issue. Obviously, I honestly don't know how they're going to solve the issue of the hospital in Limerick. Ennis is, I think, grossly underutilised. I think there's a lot more facilities out here that could be used. I think there's obviously staffing issues. There's obviously consultant issues that they need to sort out. Look, the lack of beds, Everybody's aware of it. Everybody knows the seriousness of it. I'd say there's no doubt but that lives are being lost because of the lack of beds and the lack of facilities to treat people properly.
And I find it hard to argue with you on that, but isn't that a striking thing to say about people in our communities?
No, it's a disgraceful thing to say in a first world country. Mm. I mean, and then we're having the debate with regards to the cost overruns with the Children's Hospital. That has to have a knock-on effect with regards to budgets. Anybody who's used to looking at budgets, there's a finite amount of money to be spent. If you spend it all in one month, well, then you've got to spread the rest of the months. So is this 60-bed unit just going to be another knock-on effect from that the government obviously can't admit to? Because, look, let's be honest, there will be a general election at some point.
The general election,
you know,
before
I can imagine the Children's Hospital is going to be the top of the totem pole from a discussion point of view, because there's so many points of view with regards to it that it gives great discussion. But I mean, unfortunately, the reality is, look, that across the health service and across the HSE, there is going to be knock-on effects. If this 60-bed unit is one of those knock-on effects, the lack of investment, again, in the UL hospital group is going to be a knock-on effect. I mean, I suppose people need to start getting vocal with regards to it, and maybe look what Dr. Hartey did. Look, if it's promoted this debate and if it's promoted people to start discussing it, well, then it was the right move.
People will make their own decisions on that. They'll have their own views
absolutely.
On that.
But at the end of the day, his vote wasn't going to change anything. So his vote wasn't going to unseat Simon Harris. Mm. But by protesting, he started the likes of this debate here on this radio station. He started people talking about it in the streets. He's put it to the top of the political agenda. So therefore, has he achieved what he needed to achieve?
People will have their say, I would suggest, on that particular one. Bob, your own thoughts?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, when it comes to health budgets, West Clare taking care, it's mental health is always top of our
issues,
of course, and we've talked about that before. But, you know, one of the many reasons I live in Ireland is my utter disgrace with British politics. And I have to say the Irish politics are slightly less catastrophic. But if I was Minister faint praise. If I was Minister of Health and I won a vote of confidence by 5 votes,
because
I would resign.
because a big party didn't vote.
Exactly. I would resign. I mean, I think it's appalling.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's lost the confidence of Parliament and of the people.
But because of the nature of our government at the moment, we have a minority government, no minister ever truly has the confidence. I don't think you could have any minister that Fianna Fáil would vote for.
But how many votes of no confidence have been called?
Is it about 5-6 at this stage, I think, over the last few years? Yeah. They've all had similar results because Fianna Fáil abstained. Quite, so technically he has the confidence.
Yeah.
He's a majority of TDs.
Do we have a similar problem in England? We have a Prime Minister who doesn't command the House.
So yeah, you probably do.
Yes, we do.
In terms of, it's interesting, you talked about West Clare Taking Care. It's a local mental health advocate and charity, and looking to and striving for better mental health services, particularly, as the name says, in the West Clare area. I don't know how many direct dealings you've had with the health service as part of that, but there's a crying need for more in other parts of this county.
Absolutely. And one of the things we've always said is, you know, you can transfer money. There are practitioners out there, you know, who can counsel people, who can help people, who can possibly save lives, but they're not being paid by the HSE, even when they're not paying the people who should be in post, because the posts aren't always filled. So, you know, you can transfer money to where it's being, should be used.
Mm. If it's there.
Well, it is there, yeah. If you've got a vacant post for a year, there's money being saved.
Interesting. You're Fine Gael, man. Why should we have confidence in Simon Harris?
No. Don't be so quick.
See why I'm sat in the middle here.
maybe have my own confidence to supply. Agree with the party. You know, based on international studies, just to touch on what Will said earlier, they're based on international studies. When you apply them to the Irish healthcare system, there's between 80,000 and 200,000 people harmed every year in Irish public hospitals. That's not due to lack of spending, that's either due to action or inaction. And there are several hundred people who die as a result of action or inaction compared to HSE. That will occur anyway. And that is regrettable and that's unfortunate. But that's certainly the case. In fairness to Dr. Michael Harty, he's representing his constituents. This is a local issue and he's putting that front and centre. And it's an important issue, I suppose. In terms of what Bob has said, I think it's the fourth no confidence motion, is it? Am I wrong in that?
And I think it's about five, but I'm not going to argue with you.
We're promoted by Sinn Féin. Yeah. So this is the politics of division. It has turned, we have this noise now around what is very, very important, which is the spend in healthcare, which is huge, always, very significant. It's a department that, as far as I can remember, never functioned properly. There's always been issues and difficulties with it. And you know, and I suppose maybe I'm lacking ambition in this, but I think that if we can get the 60 beds, the sooner the better. It is regrettable that they're delayed, but we need the 60 beds. And we probably need, by the time we get them, another 60 beds on top of them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, this is certainly a big issue, but it's just, for me, I suppose, and just listen to what Bob has said there, you know, It's a difficult portfolio. Sinn Féin are looking to cause disruption. I think nothing would suit them better probably than to collapse the Dáil if they could in an election around the corner when we're facing into Brexit. It is as much criticism as there is of the confidence and supply agreement between the two main parties. I think they've been very pragmatic. Brexit is coming and we need a functioning government. However poorly functioning people might say it is, but we need a functioning government right now. We can't be heading into an election and trying to deal with Brexit at the same time.
Well, we've been on air this morning. The current government have been putting up or outlining their Brexit plans, which I suppose may hark to your point, but that's not, surely Brexit isn't a reason to allow a situation continue where so many people are unhappy.
No, well, just one second. You're talking about a government department that's a Goliath. It is enormous. The spend they have is enormous. And for a minister who's dealing with that department, supposed to have total control of it and full responsibility for each mistake of it, is not very practical. And I do think you need to be practical in this. We can't always have the symbolic head rolling. We can't always have that. So you need to have somebody...
It doesn't achieve anything.
No, it doesn't. And where would we be? So they get Harris to resign. Now they're the government on the run. They're going to go after Taoiseach next because he said he accepts responsibility for this. And in fairness to him, yes, I'm a blue shirt. But in fairness to him, he came straight out and said he takes responsibility for this. He takes responsibility as Taoiseach. Fairness to him. Fair play to him for saying that. Mm. So there is accountability in so much as... Now people will say, well, let's collapse the government. So why? What is this politics about of always collapsing? Why not be constructive? And it's a bit like Juncker said during the week in terms of the British Parliament. He said all they can do is unite in voting proposals down, but they haven't yet put one forward that they'll support. So you can't always be looking to divide. But you must be constructive.
Yeah, in fairness, Garrod, I suppose the one thing is I'd love to know what Dr. Hartley's attitude would have been if his vote was going to be decisive. You know, I mean, he knew before he made his vote that it wasn't going to carry the day. I sincerely doubt as if the purpose of his vote was to collapse a government. I think his vote was just a protest to highlight the issue. I haven't spoken to him. I don't know what his opinions on it are, but you know, I suspect it wasn't to align himself with Sinn Féin.
You can get in touch if you so wish with that one. A few of you have mentioned this, so I'm going to ask you a question. As you chuckle away at the background, William, we talked about how much money is spent on healthcare in Ireland. As a percentage of GDP, where do we rank in the EU? Give a guess.
Not well, I believe.
I think it's the biggest spend in the department. Would I be right in 16 billion?
Yeah, you're right in that. But in terms of how it ranks up as a percentage
per capita, whatever.
Yeah, as a percentage of our GDP.
I think I'd say it's a high spend. We're fairly close to the top.
We're 16th in the EU.
Yeah.
CSO figures this week. We talk about spending a huge amount.
16 out of 27.
You're still in it now, Bob.
I know.
You're 28 still in this one. But in all seriousness, we talk about this. The narrative and the facts are actually slightly different. I just thought it was an interesting figure this week. Back with more in a moment.
Text Clare FM on WhatsApp now. 086 1800 964.
In association with the Tile Factory Ennis Diamond.
We focus on the small details to give you a broad perspective. Morning Focus with Gavin Grace on Clare FM.
Welcome back to the programme. Gareth Howard, William Carr and Bob Vernon are with us in studio as we review the week that was at our Friday panel. Bob, we heard yesterday on the programme, following on from comments that came from the Bishop of Clogher, as I recall, in respect of lay people officiating at funerals, or at least parts of funerals. And obviously this was focusing in our conversation was on the Catholic faith, but we had an interesting conversation with Father Tom in respect to this yesterday. What's it like, you're a retired Anglican minister, what's it like in your side of the house, shall we say?
Well, we had a similar problem 50 years ago about recruiting. We solved it in two ways. One, we recognised half of the human race as being as holy as the other half and started ordaining women. Right? So most years, the number of women ordained is almost the same as the number of men. The other problem was cash, because the church was running out of cash. And that's because we lived on Victorian wealth for decades. And when that ran out, congregations didn't want to pay for their ministry. But we started recruiting people who were not paid. Local people in their own congregations who were recognised by that congregation, they became what we call non-stipendiary or self-supporting ministers. And we have almost the same number of those as we have, almost half of those ordained. So they're known by their congregation. They always work in a team. They never work on their own. Sometimes they are vicar, but always part of a ministry team. So we have no problem with recruiting, and actually now with paying for them. Radical changes, and it took many years. Mm. I mean, I think I was only involved in the campaign for women for 20 years, but you know...
That's all it took.
But we got, history takes time. So, but the other thing we also have is an order of readers, which is not quite like deacons, but we have an order of readers, and they can take funerals, because we don't see funerals as being sacramental.
Okay, whereas in the Catholic faith,
in the Catholic Church, they are, and that makes...
Yeah. What we heard yesterday from Father Tom was that you will always have a priest for the funeral mass.
Yes,
but for...
There are other, all around that, you can have other people.
Yes, exactly. So was that similar to some of what you talked about there?
No,
and how did that go down?
If I was a reader and I was taking a funeral, I'd be the one involved in that family from the word go, because A, it's a huge privilege. You get invited into people's hearts and homes and get told these stories. Because in our church, very often you don't know the people you're burying, because we're there for everybody, not just for the congregation. So you would be with that family all the way through that journey, which is great. But that could be a reader, or it could be, you know, it could be a non-stipendary minister, or it could be a stipendary priest or vicar. And that just, it seems to work, it works well, actually.
There's no uncomfortableness, well, maybe the tradition takes this away. I think in Ireland there will be an inherent opposition or just an unease with somebody saying the prayer or leading the prayers at a graveside if somebody has been laid to rest and not being a priest.
I understand that. You know, it's culture and it's tradition and it takes a while. We had exactly the same with women. There was massive... I don't understand why, but a lot of the opposition to women priests came from women. I just don't get that.
We see it sometimes when we talk about another program.
But there you are. So it takes time to overcome these things. But if they feel that they have been handled honourably and with care, then they don't feel uncomfortable about who's taking it. You know, they feel included rather than excluded. So, but it takes time. It takes time. You know, we just got to live through these times.
What do you think of it, Gerald?
It's inevitable, I would have thought, if you see the dwindling numbers of priests that there are. When I was in Flannans, there was 5 priests in Flannans that were on the staff. And as far as I know, there's only one now, Father Iggy. And, you know, the load that these guys have to carry. So Flannans, for example, has grown from a school of a couple of hundred students to a school now of over 1,000 students. And so that one institution itself, and yet the number of priests
has fallen, yeah.
Yeah, dramatically. And that's the way it's been for a long time. So there are parishes now who are going to be without priests. And I think it's one of those things that initially it may cause a certain level of discomfort for people, but it's a bit like a Eucharistic minister. So this was necessary to help the priests in Mass.
Yes.
And this was an unusual departure. And yeah, there was people who would say, well, I'll only receive now from the priest, thank you very much. But now
I still hear that.
Yeah, but now it's normalised. Now it's not so different anymore, and it's not unusual because congregations are so... You go most days in Mass, you'll take your pick of a seat and in you go, and there's no problem. You know, whereas when I was a child, you had to be there for 12 o'clock Mass, you wanted to be there 11:45, otherwise you're standing at the back of the church. That's the way it was. It's changed now. And of course, on occasion, the priest is caught in the hop, and it's not unusual for him to say, is there any Eucharistic ministers who can come to the,
yes,
to the altar to ask for help? And this is now normalised. So, you know, in terms of sharing the burden, it's a practical solution. It's regrettable that it has happened, but less people have a calling now. There are less people with a vocation are going to the priesthood. So what can we expect? This is a practical solution to help the church to survive.
You just have to go for it in your own view. I think, William, and even if you're not very religious, and I wouldn't be very religious straight up, but I think if you were to see a diminishing of the church, you would see in tandem with that a diminishing of community. You know the way the napper after Mass on a Sunday, how many different, I'll come over and I'll help you fix that, or different issues get raised in those few minutes. And that'd be an awful shame to lose, but we are losing it already.
Yeah, but I don't think this step is necessarily a diminishing of the church. Mm. And then in one sense,
it's a further sign of it, I suppose.
No, like, to be honest, it could be a case of extending the duties further out into the community. And there's nothing that Irish people do better than community in times of tragedy. So from the point of view, if the church manages right through committees, through councils, through a body of people who are there to assist and come to assist families in times of need, you know, and walk through the funeral process, the organisation of the funeral, a lot of the duties that we've all come to expect a priest to do, but being quite rightly, could easily be organised by other members of the church.
Mm.
You know, and that therefore, yes, the priest is obviously necessary for the purposes of the Mass, but from the point of view of receiving the body at the church the evening before, is the priest strictly necessary? I don't believe so. I believe if you have other members of the church and of the community there who are dealing with it. I mean, if you think back...
What about the prayers at the grave?
Again, I think people will come to accept it. You know, I mean, I think that's a bigger departure at the gravesite itself, because I think most people will be going, well, if he's at the church, can he not make the extra half an hour to the graveside?
Mm.
I think, and in that regard, people will have to accept that there has to be more efficiencies. I remember talking to a priest once who was exasperated by the fact that he'd be told, we'll be at the church at 8 o'clock in the evening, and every funeral, no matter what the circumstances, they didn't arrive till 10:30.
Yes.
You know, and as he goes, that's every evening I have to cancel other meetings. I can't attend at other parishes. I can't attend at other commitments. So I think we all have to appreciate that, look, the church has less resources than what it once has.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, we all need to understand that, you know, we need a degree of flexibility from traditions that we might otherwise have had. And equally so, if you think about it, a lot of funerals now arrive at the church on the morning of the Mass.
That's
you know, which was pretty much unheard of. You know, a decade ago.
And the other time you will even see the reposal in the morning, the Mass that afternoon, and Shinnibal. Mm. We do it very differently, though, and I think this is the
I know,
that I don't
and,
think
and I have to say, I mean, I think when it comes around death and funerals, Ireland, it's a much healthier place in many ways than in England. I just want to say two things, and the first thing, I won't mention the elephant in the room called celibacy, but this was a question that came out of the Catholic Church some years ago during the Celts of Liberation theology movement. Is it the congregation's role to support the ministry of the priest, or is it the priest's role to support the ministry of the congregation? Because actually Christianity always talks about the priesthood of all believers, that we're all ministers, but we need to be trained and supported and encouraged in that ministry. And we've been forced in many ways to go through that for economic reasons. And I think the Catholic Church is going to be forced to go through that for other reasons, but they're doctrinal reasons.
There's a lot to contend with, but if they won't touch those,
yeah,
in your
exactly.
view, then this is what has to happen. Yeah. Garrod, are you going to go to the Irish Open in La Hinch?
No, I'm not planning to go. Unfortunately, it has lost some of its luster because
Rory McIlroy
won't be there for
are you,
sure.
You're not going because you're not a golf fan, or just
I am a golf fan, but. I wouldn't be to the extent that I'd be setting aside time to go and do this.
It's a better telly sport.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Just admit it there for a second. To what extent does Rory McIlroy's absence impact on it?
Oh, Rory McIlroy is a star, an absolute star. And that guy has just got a massive draw and presence if he was there. I think it's a huge loss, unfortunately. On a purely selfish local viewpoint, it's a massive loss for La Hinch. I could imagine nothing more. We have a huge golf tourism here in Clare, and
absolutely,
people are aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, the likes of Drumoland, Doombeg, La Hinch, and people base themselves here, and then there's a whole industry around them, especially American tourists, bringing them from, if they're based in Clare, be it in Drumoland or in Doombeg principally, that they bring them into other golf courses and yet bring them back and they stay here for the night. And these people just inhabit a different universe. They're huge contributors to the local economy.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the bars and restaurants, for these guys, they don't look at the money the way we look at it. I don't even think they count the same as we do. They just spend it. That's the way they are. And, you know, there are people surviving this. But for Rory McIlroy to come and play in La Hinch, this would just be
in a competitive.
This would be gold. Yeah. And, you know, the Americans look at it, they know Rory McIlroy, they recognise the guy. And for him to have played La Hinch, this for me would have been fantastic. A lovely rubber stamp. Now, you know, in a selfish way, and he's got to be selfish because he's a sports star, he plays for me.
Exactly.
And that's the way it works. And he has decided it's the roster that suits him. But again, just being so insular about this is such a pity.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree.
I mean, I agree with you. He's a professional. He has to do what he thinks is best and take advice on that. There may be a few people in Ennis Diamond who might be glad if there were a few less thousand people trying to get to La Hinch.
There's a very robust traffic management plan in place.
Oh, is that right?
And the bridge.
We'll see how robust it is.
And
of course, it's Willie Clancy week. The timing of it is not ideal for West Clare.
It's the quieter weekend of the Willie Clancy. It's the first weekend of the, to be fair. Are you going to be getting out of Dodge for, because you're only down the road in Milton Malby. I mean, does it?
I'll be watching on television.
You'll be watching on television.
As you say.
Will you be in terms of crowds and stuff?
Oh, I'll stay. I'll stay at home. Look after my guests.
Oh, fair enough. Are they coming for the golf?
No, coming for Willie Clancy.
Fair enough. That's okay. Your own thoughts?
Yeah. Look, I think possibly Rory's been a victim of his own success in this regard, because he would have pushed for the British Open to come across to Ireland to be in Royal Portrush. So, unfortunately, La Hinch is probably losing out. But from the point of view of golf overall, two major competitions in Ireland within 3 weeks, you know. I mean, we still have to see the full lineup for La Hinch. You know, I've heard a couple of speculative names, especially stateside. So if they come to pass, and I've no doubt, but I would imagine that Rory McIlroy probably owes a couple of favours to McGinley, and there'll be a couple of backroom chats with a couple of other higher profile fellas who won three weeks on a links course. So
I think, if I were in charge of the PR next week, somebody who has said they were coming, I would be releasing that name and kind of turn the tables and try and get, you know, the positivity back. You already have Tommy Fleetwood who's coming. He was brilliant here last year. You'll have most of the Irish. The other Irish guys will be there. And I still think it'll be a fantastic week, but you're right, that there's a little bit of lustre gone. At least for now, until somebody else comes. We're going to ask our panel what they're going to do with 175 million. And the Euro Millions, we're back in a couple of minutes. But a reminder, if you want a winner, tickets to our Ennis Book Club Festival events, the Emily Pine and Kevin Brannock and the Irish Times Book Club, they're the tickets we're giving away today, a pair of tickets to each one. Then all you have to do is text the word book, your name and where you are, 086 1800 964. The Ennis Book Club Festival runs from the Friday the 1st until Sunday the 3rd of March, with dozens of events going on, many of them free. Check them out, ennisbookclubfestival.com. Back with more in a minute.
Bringing you stories from all corners of the county. Morning Focus with Gavin Grace on Clare FM.
You're welcome back. Our final panel here, Garrod Howard and William Cahir and Bob Vernon. Before we go,
I want to talk about this.
They woke up Wednesday morning, just when the day was dawning. Interest they were earning, the Rogers family. Just like in the films, they won the Euro Millions. It must have felt like villains, the Rogers family.
This past Wednesday, we saw 175 million euro on Wednesday morning going to a family, and fair play to them, based in and around the Knoll in County Dublin. 175.4 million and change. fair play to them. It's the biggest ever lotto jackpot victory of any sort in this country. William Carr, what would you do with 175 million euro? Would you want it? I've heard so many people say this week that they wouldn't want to win. 5 million would be loads. 10 million would be grand.
But sure, isn't that up to the issue of that if you get it, you can give it away?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
and, so there's no difficulty in that regard.
Would you want it?
Yes, and as in, like, I'd have...
Of course
you know,
would.
I mean...
I don't understand,
you know, I mean, I don't
people.
Understand people who say no, because at the end of the day, look, if you want to give bequests to charities, if you want to take care of, you know, the everybody who you know, you're in a position to do so, you know. So now, some people might not like the pressure, some people might not like everything that comes with it. I mean, look, the big thing is, if you got that loan, that amount of money in one go, I mean, I would say go out and get a hell of a lot of professionals and take some time out yourself to try and get your head around it.
Or even a fraction of that money. How would you do with it? It's all yours.
I have
75 million euros.
I have absolutely no idea. I know I'd have a very big car garage.
Yeah, I think, yeah. You'd have your dreams.
You know, Shelby Cobras and a few other things have come to mind, but you know what I mean?
They wouldn't be so good around the roads if roads were clear. You'd be giving it all away to charity, would you?
Well, I would never buy a Euro lottery ticket for that very reason. It would take over my life. And it's fine saying give it away. The question isn't who do you give it to, it's who do you not give it to. Mm. However, like everyone else, I've run the fantasy of winning a few million, and that would be no problem at all. Thank you. I could cope with a few million very easily. Yeah, charities, you just tithe. I mean, give away a tenth. And that's not charity. That's just to solve your conscience.
It's up to these people to do what it is they wish. And, you know, fair play to them and all of that. And I know that it's split, what is it, 9 ways? So you're talking...
Yes.
Just under 20 million each, if that's the case.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you could do an awful lot with giving 5 million of that away and still have everything that you want to do for yourself.
Oh, yes, I think so.
You know?
But I also know myself too well. You know, I mean, I could talk myself into all the indulgences that kind of money would allow, and I'd rather not do it. You know, I've never had enough money to worry about in my life. I haven't worked for money since I was 18. I work for the joy of it and the pleasure of it and everything else. It's not where I get my happiness from. But I do know if I had that total freedom, yeah, it would be. How big a car garage?
Your virtuistic morals
fly out. Do I want a rainbow range of Porsches? So, no, I'd just rather not. A couple of million, fine. My family would benefit, but I wouldn't want to give my children and grandchildren money to mean they didn't have to strive and continue. But they all do work, you know, teachers, midwives, social workers, charity. This is what my family do. They'd still carry on doing that because it's their passion.
But if you want that, I don't know, would you go in the morning after? That's how this all got cut out. Genuinely, a couple of members of the family called in sick to work. And I heard it said on one radio station.
I don't have to worry about it too much.
Yeah.
It's a grotesque sum of money.
It's grotesque that you don't have it. No,
it's just in itself. I mean, it's a big number to draw people in to buy tickets, I suppose, and for them to make more money in it. But it's just, I mean, how any normal person be expected to deal with that? I don't know. If they split the pot 10 ways and a 10 draws to 17.5 million, that is still a huge sum of money for someone to have to deal with. So, like, you've a lot of issues with that. So, if you got to worry about your kids being kidnapped now, is that the problem? And you'd probably have a queue outside your house of people coming looking for help, which is fantastic if you're of the mind and you can deal with that, but you'd fill your day with it. And, you know, I suppose when you were talking there about giving it away, I was thinking of Chuck Feeney of Atlantic Philanthropic, who's given away billions who lives a very simple life, and was interviewed one time by an Irish journalist, and he commented that he was wearing a Casio watch.
That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking.
That he paid $15 for. And he was aghast at this, that, you know, this guy with so much money and giving everything, he wouldn't even treat himself to watch. He said, why? He said, it tells the same time as an expensive one. And when the journalist got home, when he flew back from America 2 weeks later, a present came in the post, which was a Casio watch from Chuck Feeney. But as Chuck Feeney said, his dream in life, he wants to give away all his money, and I think he's almost succeeded in that. And he said his dream in life is that the last check he writes will bounce. And he said, if that happens, he's achieved his goal. He has no money left. Yeah. And, you know, which is very noble.
That's what you're doing. If you get this money, you're giving it away. You probably don't want it.
I think anybody in the right mind would be terrified of someone like that. I think that we're flawed as humans, and we have to sometimes rein ourselves in from our worst impulses. And if you had this sort of money, well, where would things end? You'd be richer than Bono probably, and most other people here. Mm-hmm. And why would you want that? And who would your friends be now? And would you still go around to the local for two sneaky pints on a Friday on the way home? Or how would you exist? Or would you want to be outside in Vegas? You know, I think this kind of wealth and this amount of possibilities, I think, could just possibly rip you apart. How could you compute it and deal with it?
The limo outside the pub would be a bit good.
It would be a giveaway, yeah. And Will's Shelby.
Actually, there was an Irishman on Anglesey. He was an agricultural worker to live in a cottage, tied cottage, had very little money, and he won the football coupon.
Oh, yeah. The pools.
Yeah, and the only difference it made was, instead of walking to the pub every night, he would take a taxi to the pub, and he would buy occasional rounds. That's the difference it made to his life. Now, it wasn't 175 million, but it was a very significant amount, and he didn't let it change his way of life. That's sane. I wish I would be that sane.
Yeah. There's lots of texts that have come in. Maura has been in touch. He says that there have been people doing lay people for funerals for 100 years. The rest of us need to wake up. Kish came, she says, if that's the case. Sean and Shannon in touch in the hospital. You want to build a hospital, get an architect to design it, get all the process done. And if that's done right, accept the price and go ahead. What can possibly go wrong? He cannot see how the price of the project was doubled. And he says the government seems to... Another texter, excuse me, this is Anne in West Clare. The government seems to have a free reign under the cover of Brexit with the support of Fianna Fáil. Those are just some of the comments. The winners of our competition this morning: Tarznan O'Connell is from Ennis. Tarznan, you're off to see Emily Pine as part of the Ennis Book Club Festival, and Carmel Whelan in Doolin, you're heading to the Irish Times Book Club event as well. My thanks to our Friday panel of Gareth Howard, of William Cahir, and of Bob Vernon. When we're back, we'll look ahead to the Russell Memorial Weekend.
Text Clare FM on WhatsApp now, 086 1800 964.
In association with the Tile Factory Ennis Diamond, specialising in your complete bathroom renovation.